going to move on to the third and fourth step. I just wanted to point out, though, before we get going, that we do have literature over here. The books are sold at a price. It's listed in the front of the book. The paper is for free. If you are new to AA, there is a newcomer packet there. Feel free to take that. And we're going to just go right into it. And
thank
we
you.
Start with you, Sammy?
Yeah.
Okay, Sammy on the third and fourth step.
Hi, everybody. Again, I'm Sammy. I'm an alcoholic.
Sammy!
And I wanted to tell y'all that when we get into the four step, I think a good line for us to use or something to go by is on page 52. And it talks about our the bedevilments. And we will go into that when I go into the four step, I hope, because it's so hard to get. Oh, the bedevilments on page 52. And it talks, are you having personal relationship problems? Are you prey to misery? You know, I couldn't make real, be of real use to anybody. So we'll get into that. But isn't this interesting? We're on chapter 5. And chapter 5 is on 3 and 4. And it's really important for you to realize, when the big book first came out, when people sent away from it because wives in California couldn't wait to get their husbands sober. So they sent away for this book. And what they did immediately, and it's so funny because it's so typical and of us doing this, but when they got the book, where do you think they went to immediately? How It Works. They don't care about anything, just get my husband sober. You know, that was their thing. And then a lot of people today, we come in and that's why we read this. And it's really the meat and potatoes of the program anyhow. But I will tell you, though, it's really important to read before chapter 5. A lot of people come in and they just start at chapter 5. But it's just something there's a lot of new people here. And that identification is so big. You know, to tell you all the truth, we can't, and Christy, you did such a good job on this, we can't give alcoholics a definition of what that is, but we can give a description. Maybe not a definition, but we describe ourselves really well, don't we? And she gave a great description of many of that. But so when we read the How It Works, at the end of it, and I love this because they are in How It Works. If Bill Wilson could have changed one word in this book, and he said this many years later, he would have changed rarely. That's that one word he would like to have changed. And it says this whole thing about how it works. I think the important part for me is they are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. When someone can't get it, my sponsor used to say, Sammy, you are capable of grasping and developing a manner of living. They're not there yet. But it would drive me crazy because I would take this book and try to beat it over their head, you know, to get sober. But at the end of How It Works, it gives us our description of the alcoholic. Not a definition, but a description. And that is the description of the alcoholic, which is is more about alcoholism, the chapter to the agnostic, chapter 4, and our personal stories before and after. They're all the personal stories in the back of the book. Make clear these three pertinent ideas: that I'm an alcoholic and cannot manage my own life. And unmanageability, as I just told you all about the page 52, the bewilderments. Then probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. So I tried my parents, I tried friends, I tried getting married, I tried some human power to fix me. That God could and would if he were sought. It doesn't say anything about being found. It says that I have to keep seeking. Because I don't know about you, but my God gets bigger and bigger. All right, so being convinced of what? What am I convinced of? I'm convinced of those three things. I am convinced that I'm at step 3, which is that I decided to turn my will and my life over to God as we understood him. just what do we mean by that and just what do we do? So it's going to tell me exactly, precisely, specifically, as the big book uses all three words. It tells me those things. It's going to tell me what to do because I don't know what to do. And it tells me the first requirement is that I be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. So that's my first requirement. So there's requirements here. The only requirement to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous is that you just say you are. But it's not the only requirement to stay sober. Anybody can be a member. There's no requirement. Just you're an alcoholic. But it's not the only requirement. There are requirements to stay sober. So the first one is that I have to be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. What does success mean to you? When I first got here, success meant money, property, and prestige. You know, that is success. But it's not that today. It's not that today. Me being comfortable in my own skin, me wearing my clothes loosely. You know, being able to look you in the eye. I couldn't do that before. You know, being enough. Being enough is success for me today. You know, simple things that, you know, when someone comes up to me and they go, gosh, Sammy, it's so wild. I went over to my family's house and, you know, for the first time, I didn't open my mouth. I just kept it shut. And I went, that's big. That's big. You know, we're looking for the sky to open and, you know, God to come down and going, good job, you know. And those things like that, those are big. That's success to me today because God's working in my life today. So that's a requirement. On that basis, we are almost in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. So when I'm running on self-will, any time that I'm in collision with something or somebody, it says anytime. I'm in self-will. Well, that could make me mad because I was always in self-will. I was always annoyed, and I was always annoyed. You know, when I first got here, everybody made me mad. I must have had 20 home groups at the beginning because I would get a resentment immediately and have to get a new home group. You know, because I really had a hard time with people. People were such a problem. You know, and AA has got a lot of people in it. Couldn't run, couldn't duck and hide. So anytime you're in collision with something or somebody, you're in self-will. So most people, and we all know this story here, I'm like an actor, you know, and I'm either gracious or I'm demanding, whatever it may be, you know, and, you know, it gives a great description of me. It says, I may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, I may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. And I was both of those things. If it served me well to be nice and kind, I could pull it out of my hat. Nothing up my sleeve. I could pull those things out, you know, because I didn't really know that I had developed those skills. I didn't know that I had fine-tuned them over so many years. It really, when I got sober, my sponsor was so kind enough to point that out to me. What are you doing? I don't know. I'm just getting by, you know? That's what I'm doing. You know, so I think it's really important, and Christy said it. Like, I just didn't know really what was going on inside, you know? I could see y'all all doing it, you know, doing the next right thing. My sponsor at the very beginning, and I'm sure y'all have heard this before, she made me do something nice for somebody and not tell them. You know, that was hard, you know, because I want that gold star. You know, when I do something right, I want everybody knew when I did something wrong. But I wanted, you know, those pats on the back. So what usually happens, the show doesn't come off right. And it usually doesn't when I'm trying to control everything. And for me, it took me a long time to try to stop fixing it because God either is or he isn't. God is either everything or he is nothing. You know, what is your choice to be? My sponsor told me that even fear is a choice. Even fear. If you want to choose to stay in it, that's fine. Self-pitying. I was full of self-pity. And that was fear for me too. And I was choosing to stay in that. Either you, God is or he isn't. And so on page 62, it says that selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. I was driven. I was driven by 100 forms of fear, and I didn't even know how to stop. See, we're getting into the part of the big book that it's really important for me to recognize these things, that how was I going to stop doing these things? You know, how was I going to stop feeling sorry for myself? How was I going to stop feeling hate? You know, and that's why in the third step, now I'm powerless over alcohol. Okay, I know that in two different ways, and I understand my life is unmanageable. My life was in the toilet, you know, and you know, but it was my toilet, you know. I was going to hold on to it, you know. But when it came to the second step, that I had a sponsor who literally told me every day, who reminded me, Sammy, God is. God is. And I'm like, okay, that's great. I believe you. You know, this is good. You know, and then 10 minutes later, I was chiseled down to anger again, you know, but I was still practicing that thing. So, and it says on the next line, which I love, so our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. That means that I don't have to wait for you to get better for me to get better. And see, I always wanted you to get to change. And every time, and I'm telling you, it really took a long time for me to understand that I had to change in order for anything to change. I wanted you to be different. It was really a hard thing for me to swallow. So it goes down on the bottom of the 62. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. Okay, now God either is or he isn't. I said that I was going to turn my life and my will over to this God that I said I would do. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, because my life was very dramatic, God was going to be the director. He is the principal, we are his agents. He is the father, and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch to which we pass to freedom. Now, Bill had these great things. You know, he just had a great mind. He's building something. He wanted us to build an arch that we could pass to freedom. On page 12 in the big book in Bill's story, it said that willingness is our foundation. This is the arch that he's building. In fact, he puts it in those architectural words. On page 12, he says it was only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. Nothing more was required of me to make a beginning. I saw that growth could start from that point. Upon a foundation of complete willingness, I might build what I saw in my friend. So we're building something here. So my foundation has got to be willingness. I got to tell y'all that if you know this big book, because in step five, it's going to ask you, are your stones in place, properly in place? Have you made mortar without sand? Is your foundation solid so far? It's going to ask you those questions. So we're building this arch. And then on page 42, Forty-seven. It says, this is we agnostic, because willingness is the first step. That's all you have to do is have willingness. In the second step, it says on 47, second paragraph at the bottom of it, it has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. So I have my foundation of willingness. And now, have you ever gone to a building and you saw like the cornerstone, it says 1951? Well, that's a cornerstone. So on the cornerstone is the second step. It's a belief stone. So now I'm at step two, and am I willing to believe? Is that stone in place? Is it properly in place? I've already got the willingness. And now I'm coming to believe. I don't just believe, I have to come to believe. You know, and it's like a domino effect, guys. Once you get this, you can't wait to pass it on. So now we're at the third step, which is the keystone. And the keystone is that place, because this was in Rome. They built this arch, and in the middle of the arch, right in the middle of the top piece right here, is a keystone. And that keystone, that stone, everything relies upon that stone to stay together. It's the keystone, and that's our third step. That is the stone. That is the God stone. Everything is placed on that stone. So that's why you're at the keystone. It says at the beginning of step, at the end of the step three, it says that most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch to which we pass to freedom. So once that, hi Tula, once that stone is in place, you have built an arch to freedom. Christy was telling me earlier, she goes, gosh, once we get one, two, I mean, everything is just, you know, going, because we have our keystone in place. I have a God that's going to take care of me. I don't think it. I don't believe it anymore. I know it. It came into my heart. How did that happen? How did that happen to someone like me who has nothing but hate in her heart, nothing but inconsiderate, nothing but fear? How did that happen? My stone is in place today. So that starts me off now. Here's the promise of this third step. We had a new employer. Because, you know, I fired the manager. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed. He's going to give me everything I need. He's going to give me everything. He may not give me everything I want, but he'll give me everything I need. He'll give me everything I need if we keep close to him and perform his work well. What does that mean? What do I have to perform well? What do I got to do to get this? You know, I used to like think, this is really just my thinking when I first got sober. I'm going to do this so God will love me more than he loves you. I mean, I was a sick puppy. But if I just do this, God will love me. God loves me no matter what. I don't have to earn his love. He already loves us. But you know, I always thought that I have to do something special for him to love me more. I think I'm addicted to more. Okay, so more is so more. So that's the promise. Established on such a footing. You know, I'm on a different footing today. We become less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs, because I got some plans, you know. I've got another design today, a design for living. It's a new blueprint for me. So, one of my favorite lines in is, as we felt new power, because the old's not working, flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, my goodness, did I want that. You know, my mind was just full of chaos. Full of chaos, and all I wanted in my life is just to feel, just to breathe, just to feel light, you know, not to carry, you know, have the world on my shoulders, make heavy going of life. As we discovered, we could face life what? Successfully. I just talked to you, what is success to you? Success to me is peace of mind. As we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. And I got to tell you, when I first read that, I went, oh my goodness, I'm Jewish. I don't get reborn. You know, I'm in trouble here. And the truth of the matter is, I couldn't wait to feel reborn, to have a new footing, to be on a different soil today. I love that today. I am reborn. That old Sammy has died off. I'm still Sammy, but the new power has flowed into me today. And of course, we say the third step prayer. I don't know how long I've been talking, but who cares? she does. the third step prayer, and my sponsor had me get on my knees to do this third step prayer. And we've all said it, and I can go through the third step prayer, but, you know, let Christy do it. The most important thing to me about the third step prayer was my sponsor handed me a pencil and paper and said, you're on your way to a new you. And I couldn't get a new you until I know about how Sammy ticks. You know, I told you a little part of my story about my dad and everything, but all the life, I was a ducker and hider. I mean, I ran. I lived in so many different cities, and all I did was just pile these things, these bricks, inside. She read that on page 55, you know, deep down inside a man, deep down inside every man, woman, and child is that fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by pomp, by calamity, but in some form or another is there. So what I have been doing over the years is just stuffing that down. Everything that I couldn't stand to see. If I didn't like you, I threw you away. If I couldn't pay a bill, I threw that away. You know, if I made a mistake, I'd just move to another city. You know, I couldn't make a mistake. I could not make a mistake. It was like the end of my world. And I would just move to another city. So here I am pushing it all down, and now I get to this four step. And a lot of people fear this four step. You know, my biggest fear was I wasn't going to do it right. You know, I felt stupid. I felt inadequate. I felt like I just couldn't do the words. When I first got here, I had lost all my reading skills. You know, they had evaporated. Probably with that absolute alcohol or something. I don't know. But what happened to me is I sat down and I wrote anyhow, because just like Christy said, my sponsor sat down with me and we did what the big book says. If it said pray, we prayed. If we said write, we wrote. And the good news is I didn't have to do it alone. So I started out, I'm going to do this quickly. I don't remember how long I had, but the four step is something that most of us never did, as the big book says. You know, it says that at once, it doesn't say next week, next year, every year I think I'll do a step. You know, I've heard that before. Mm-hmm. It says at once. Because if I'm going to, if this step, though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face, to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. It didn't say anything like, oh, I just need to get used to, I got to learn to live with. I'm unblocked. It's been removed. These things have been taken from me, most of them. A lot of them have died down, you know, or that's what happens. They just get toned down because, you know, these things will still pop up in my life. But what's happened to me is I did a four-step, and I wrote down everything it said to do in the book, whether I understood it or not. What I had is someone explain it to me. My sponsor told me about her resentments, and I had nothing but hate in my heart. My heart was full of hate, and I was so resentful, and it says that in a resentment, that if these things are fatal. I mean, Louise and I were just talking, you know, and her resentment caused her physical illness. I mean, resentments will kill you. I had more resentments in AA than I think I ever did outside of. You know, that's why I keep changing home groups. But what happened to me is, and I'm telling y'all, what happened is I kept coming back. And by doing this four step, I saw the truth about Sammy. I had to swallow a lot of truths. And I did. I saw. I can't go through the four step, but I will tell you, I had 3 months when I was on my four step. You know, Bill had a week. When his friend visited him and he, you know, had a, with his acquaintance, he talked about his deficiencies and his sins. You know, I had 3 months, and believe me, I was pretty torn up about this four step. It left me raw. It did. But see, the great news is that God abhors a vacuum. He does. And it tells us that in this book. And what happened is he replaced courage in my life. you know, instead of fear. He replaced love in my heart instead of the hate. Everything that I had been practicing, you know, doing for others when I wouldn't even tell them, everything that my sponsor told me to do when I didn't think it was a good idea was leading towards all that, and I never knew it. You know, to do things for others and to go pick up women, to, you know, go do all these things, I didn't know that it was releasing the bondage of self, all those things. So, I don't know if I talked over, but no, I'm going to now pass it on to...
Oh, you still have a couple minutes?
I love you guys. No, go ahead. I'll pass it.
Sammy and I are both of the belief when you're done, you're done.
Yeah.
I know when I'm run out of stuff to say, it's time to be quiet. Mm-hmm. But I'll call it named Christy Ellis. And so great. Like, I never, ever, ever get tired of talking about their program. It's just such a shot in the arm. I'm just so excited. And to look out and see friends I know and mm-hmm. new friends. And that, you know, on a Friday night, at, you know, 10 after 8, sitting in here talking about a spiritual solution. I mean, my God. You know, and it's like, it's great. I mean, it's exciting to me, you know. And I'm like... You know, I've been at a staff retreat all week with work, and it's been really neat. And I'm thinking, you know, and it's good, and it's exciting. You know, it's a new job I started in January, and it's a great work family, and it's good stuff. And I'm just sitting there getting excited, you know, thinking about I'm going to be hanging up with my people. Mm-hmm. And so grateful, you know, to talk about, you know, the steps. I always say the steps, you know, walked me out of a hell I never thought I'd get out of. And they really did, and they walked me out of it totally. And I thought, you know, I got sober when I was 30 years old, and for a long time before I got sober, I didn't think I'd live to be 30. And after I've been sober a while, you know, the thing about being in recovery that I love, it's ongoing, it's about growing, and I don't care how long I'm sober, I'm just gonna continue to grow, and it's gonna get that depth and weight and the layers that we talk about. The more work I do, the more is revealed. God sends me the postcards and lets me know stuff and all that little stuff. But it's like, I did, you know, it hit me like, it, not even that, you know, a few years ago, you know, that really I died to self. I did die when I was 30, to self. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're talking about here, you know, about the third step, you know, and being reborn. And that there is a way out, you know, and it doesn't have to be like that. You know, and that, you know, if I really understand the truth of my condition, you know, and get that, then I can start building. Like, and I love your description, Sammy, and thank you for sharing that. I love it. I love the way it's outlined. And it's totally the book, clear-cut directions on what to do. But I can tell you, it looks like Chinese if I try to do it by myself, like mm-hmm. I said before. And it works just so much better with somebody else. And when I say I have a sponsor, that means I'm not doing it alone. And that's why, you know, I can remember there are groups that would say, when's the last time you talked to your sponsor? And I used to, you know, at first I was like, that's nobody's business. And then I thought, but gosh, accountability. I mean, well, and I'm all about, I mean, I need to ask myself this kind of questions. Mm-hmm. You know, I need to look at this book sometimes and turn these statements into questions and say, was that me? And I will do that with people when I go through mm-hmm. the book. You know, I'll take a lot of the statements and, you know, did you feel like that? Was that your experience? And that helps me. But I have to be, I mean, I got a quick forgetter. I've got a disease called alcoholism, and it's very subtle, and it'll sneak in as busy as I am. And I'm a busy girl, and it can sneak in, and it's got a lot of faces, and I'll talk about that in a moment. But what I love, you know, in the third step, of course, ditto on everything Sammy said, and we're trying to, like, because we've got a short amount of time, but each of us will say things the other isn't saying, so we can really, you know, explore, you know, all of it and talk about it. My entire life, you know, I was, you know, I'm a fantasy girl. I loved it. We called it make-believe when I was little, but when I got older, it wasn't make-believe. It was Christy's delusion in her head, but, you know, my own little cinema going on. But it's, and I used to play Barbies when I was a kid, and I say it jokingly, but it was true. But I loved to choreograph Barbie's life. And then I really like to choreograph your life. And that's what this is talking about. It speaks to me. I get the actor. I get the, you know, and the thing is, you know, and I was told a kind of a neat thing you can do about, you know, on page 61, when it says what usually happens is substitute your name for he. Mm-hmm. You know, the show doesn't come off very well. Christy begins to think life doesn't treat her right. Christy decides to exert herself more. she becomes, on the next occasion, more demanding or gracious, like Sammy talked about. I was a person that had a big old rope attached to everything I did. Mm-hmm. But I thought I was a good person, but I was going to make sure I was going to get something. Now, I didn't know that. Because everything that I thought of myself, of course, changed when I got sober and went through this process, because it looked real different. You know, the truth looks different than, you know, what was really going on. But that's kind of a neat thing to do with that paragraph, is to put my name in that place, because it really made it more personal for me. And talking about really understanding about self-centeredness, you know, because I used to, you know, I wake up thinking about me, think about me all day long, think about me when I go to bed, and I want you to think about me, you know. And the thing is, I'm thinking of self-centered means it's not how much I think of me, it's that I think of what I think of me. I think about myself all the time. It's not what, how much I think, but it's I'm thinking about myself often. I mean, probably every minute. You know, it's that self-obsession, you know, and it's just in my head, and talking about being driven by the fears, self-seeking and self-pity. I am a seeker by nature. Mm-hmm. I love to feel good. And I mean, from the minute I took a drink, and before that it was other stuff. Reading books, I'd get escape off in books. You know, we used to, at pajama parties, we'd feign each other, hyperventilate. I mean, that crazy crap. Now, you know, it's that stuff kills people. That's not safe. But, you know, I didn't care. You know, and somebody tell me that this will make you feel different, I did it. You know, and then when I hit alcohol, it's like the answer. And then alcohol enhancers. I mean, I did anything you put in front of me. You know, because I want to feel good. You know, because it's, and I'm a seeker. I'm always looking to feel good, and I want you to make me feel good. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's part of me trying to figure out what I think is supposed to be going on in my life. I think, you know, and it's the I think. And that word is dangerous, because I do not know what's best for me. And I also, like, you know, Sammy talked about our troubles we think are basically of our own making. That is so much hope in that, because mm-hmm. what you said, you know, the world doesn't have to change, I do. And I remember when I got, you know, in early sobriety, and going to my sponsor and saying, man, my family is so different. They have really changed. And she's just laughing. And I'm like, why are you laughing? She said, it's you that's changed. It ain't them. You think everybody changed, not you? So, you know, that just drives that home. And that's a lot of hope in that. Mm-hmm. I'm not stuck being the way I am. And back in the how it works, one thing I like, and we... about the honesty piece, having the capacity to be honest, that is so critical.
Huge.
What does that mean? Oh my gosh, I couldn't have put words to it. You know, but sadly, most people that I've watched relapse or in and out, can't be honest.
Right.
And I've seen people that might be challenged in some other ways, be honest and stay sober. So that is so critical. And it's, you know, through the years, we were talking about this, and every person I was thinking of, it was the honesty thing. I didn't know either. We have to learn. And some of it, you know, starts happening because, you know, we realize, wow, you know, and it's like we just keep taking the next right action and we keep getting better. And, yeah, I can remember in early sobriety, you know, I joined a home group because you said to do that. I got a job in the home group because you said to do that. And I'd learned about, you know, going early and staying out in the parking lot for hours talking and all that, going to Aunt Sarah's forever, drinking coffee I didn't like, and just to be a part of, you know, and I loved it, you know, just to... And I can remember driving home one night, and I'm driving up the hill to Mom's house, and Mom and Dad, because I was still living with them. I lived with them the first few months while I got on my feet, got a job, and, you know, did things in order, got a job, then got the apartment. And I'm, like, freaking out. What am I going to tell my parents? Oh, my God. I'm freaking. Oh, my God. I've been standing out there. It's 10:30 at night. What are I going to do? And, you know, our head, 0 to 60. And right almost as when I got to their house, I went, the truth. I'll tell them the truth, you know? And so I told them the truth,
right.
You know? And I had, I mean, it's like this, you know, and that was God. That wasn't, you know, but it's like, it's, and that sound, y'all get that, right? I mean, it's like, that's not small. That was a turning point in my sobriety. I mean, I was like, wow. You know, and they weren't even worried. I worried, but that was big, you know? And it's like, I mean, I used to feel good when I took library books back on time. I mean, stuff like that, you know, because I felt like, and I mean, seriously would feel empowered because I'm returning books on time in a library. But it's that, it's doing, and what I really, my sponsor's like, no, You're doing the next right thing. You're learning to live. You're getting in the mainstream of life. And that's what we do. And this is what this does. It's that design for learning, living Sammy was talking about. And you're walking out of that hell, and you're asking for direction. And so, it's on the bottom of page 62 when, we were talking about step three, and I was talking with my sponsor, and boy, I had a drama life too. I think we all did. I mean, we could write some great books, about our lives. I just couldn't capture it all, But, and I'm with you, Moore and Free and Clarence. They're all some of my favorite words too, but I did have to have God's help, and it says that. It does say at the beginning of the paragraph about their troubles are basically of my own making, but, and it says many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we would have liked to. Mm-hmm. That was me. Mm-hmm. I was raised in this great house, it's wonderful parents, great examples. They're still married today. Good people. I mean, happily married, there's a difference. They're good. I mean, I learned so much from these people that I rebelled against and fought and criticized until I got sober and I thought. And some of those teachings about commitment and being early and being on time and stuff like that, all of a sudden, I was like, wow, I was given that there, but there's no way I could have tapped into it because I was in my own way. I was a seeker. I wanted something big. I wanted to be you or you and mm-hmm. feel like you and do that. And I changed my mind every other minute about everything, especially guys. I mean, it was just crazy. One minute, oh, he's the one. Oh, he's so cute, blah, blah. And next week, now he's, oh, he's, and the friends would be saying, I thought you said, oh, no, and it wasn't about them, it was about me. Mm-hmm. It's like, I want instant gratification, I want you to make me feel better, and not just that, and that's why alcohol was so great for me, because I could do it, and it was an answer, and it took me 0 to 60 quick, usually farther than I wanted to go, because I ended up passing out, or waking up in strange places with strange people, and things like that, and that's what happened later. But, and that's, of course, as, it progressed, because it does. But even in my teenage years, I drank like that, and stuff was happening. But my seeking and my desire to be a part of and me trying to fill the God-shaped hole was so huge, and me being that actor, because I was a chameleon. I fit in with everybody. I don't want to be left out. I got this thing. I used to say, I'm going to have it on my tombstone, don't forget about me. And I want to be included. I want to be there. I want to be included. And it means a lot to me, and so all through school, I got to know everybody, and I got invited. I mean, I did stuff I don't even believe in. Imagine that. But I mean, stupid stuff. Like I joined a sorority once. I don't even like that crap. It's so clicky, and it just wasn't me. But I did it because it felt good that somebody wanted me to join, and it was more. That was bigger. And so I would negotiate a lot of things that I wanted and I think I could talk myself into doing anything, all in the name of feeling special, being loved, even though I had it all right home. I mean, I had it. But see, my mind and my alcoholism separates me. My alcoholism separates me from me, you, and God. And it separated me my whole life. I didn't know that. It'll separate me today. Very easily, if I don't take care of this thing daily. And what it did is that there was a disconnect. And I didn't even know what that was. I didn't understand it. It's like I came in and I always felt this, I'd never felt, hooked in. And I couldn't put words to it. It's almost like there was a glass between me and everything that was going on. I was just so, removed. And I'd want to feel hooked in and I'd want to feel there. And I couldn't manufacture it. I couldn't make it. But y'all helped make sense of it. As always, you help me make sense of it. And it was through this process, and it's talking about the drama, and it's talking about the three relationships, the three types of relationships with God in that paragraph. The director, principal, and the father, and we're his children. I'm one of God's kids. Wow, that's awesome. And I have grown to just treasure mm-hmm. being one of God's kids, just one of many, because I thought I had to be the deal to be somebody. I thought I had to have a certain title or look a certain way or a certain guy or a certain house or certain anything on the outside. Mm-hmm. And truly, I don't have to have any of that. Because no matter what, I'm going to be okay if I'm just one of God's kids and I'm grounded in doing what we're doing here on this Friday night at 8:20, talking about a spiritual solution and about living. So Sammy talked about the arch, and I love that, and she went through the promises, you know, the third step promises, and it talks about, you know, being reborn, and I truly believe that was my experience, and there are promises all through this book, and we'll talk about some of them as we go through. You know, we are limited on time, so we ask God to give us the word so you'll hear whatever he wants you to hear. And you probably rather hear that anyway. But the third step prayer is very, I mean, that is a prayer that, it's funny, it's one of the first ones I learned by heart, you know, be saying it so much. It's actually something I give even my new people when I start sponsoring them. I'll say, read 60 to the bottom of 60, you know, after being convinced to the end of the third step prayer every morning as a morning reading. And I know if they're learning the third step prayer, you know, because when we do that before we all speak, you know, we will get everybody, or just sometimes just I'll say, let's do the third step prayer. And I was told, and I didn't know this, and it's just AA trivia, but there's no amen at the end of that, because God's going to keep us safe and protected until the end of the seventh step prayer, when it does say amen. And he's good while we go through that, because that's a pretty big deal we're getting ready to do, you know. But that prayer I've heard described so many ways, but what it talks to me that I get is bondage of self. Oh my gosh, I had no clue that's what was going on. Just all that me. It was just all that me, you know. And it's asking God to take away the difficulties, that victory of them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. I heard an old-timer describe it at one time, and he said, it was, let me be a demonstration. You know, let me be a demonstration. And once again, we're talking about helping others. And there's so many different ways that we help others. Be an example. Your literature talks somewhere about being attractive to others. People want to be around us because we're attractive. We don't have to say anything. The loudest noise we make are our actions. You know, it's what we do that speaks volumes. Mm-hmm. I've been running my mouth my whole life, trying to convince people of this, that, and the other. Trying to convince myself of this, that, and the other. But it's what I do that counts. It's not even what I think, feel, or believe. It's what I do. It's what am I doing. You know, this is about doing, plain and simple. There's two things I believe. Well, there's a whole lot of things I believe about AA. One is it's about doing, and AA is not for takers, plain and simple. And what I'm doing is going through a process that's going to suit me up, ready to share this beautiful message. And I stay sober if I do that. Mm-hmm. I'll stay sober if I keep passing it on. And so it talks about, we found it very desirable to take this spiritual step with an understanding person, such as our wife, best friend, or spiritual advisor. I, you know, did it with my sponsor and on my knees. And we've done it. I mean, remember in Thumpers that time, the whole group did it, the whole meeting did it. And like I said to y'all earlier, I'm going to the Tuesday night, I go to the jail. And I told the ladies, you know, we're going to pray when it says pray, and we'll be getting on our knees soon. And I'm psyched about it, about them having that experience. You know, I mean, there is such a humbling, beautiful prayer. You know, it's just a kind of a breathe God in, breathe Christy out. You know, I heard a little four-year-old kid say that one time, and I stole it, because I said, man, that's a good third-step prayer. That's a good third-step prayer, really. And that's what I'm saying. Breathe me out. You know, come on, God, breathe me out. And, well, she didn't say Christy. She said, Mommy, breathe God in and Mommy out. And I thought, oh, my gosh. Little Kimmy. Kimmy, yeah, you know her. So, anyway, after we do this, and it says something that's really important. The wording was, of course, quite optional, so long as we express the idea. And it's talking about using the prayer, and it's saying without reservation. And we've already talked about not having a lurking notion of reservation earlier, and more about alcoholism. There cannot be. My experience is watching, and it's just such a testimony to this disease and how insidious it is, that I've seen people with a lot of years have a lurking notion. And when they get honest, that I was just talking about, they admit, well, I was thinking maybe one day I could drink again. And they just weren't being honest that they were thinking it. And if you're thinking it, it's okay. Tell somebody. I mean, that's the deal. I mean, nobody's going to fall out because an alcoholic says he might be thinking about drinking. I mean, come on. I mean, it might. I mean, truly. The thing is, it will save your life. I mean, it can save your life, because we don't know, you know, what's going to happen, but that will save your life. But it's funny, when we get here, we start thinking that, and it's like, well, alcoholics drink, you know, but we have alcoholic minds. You know, we need to talk about that stuff. That's the stuff, it's the little piranha that eat us alive from the inside out, you know? And so, how do we abandon ourselves? By doing 4 through 9 is what I was told. And so the first thing I'm going to do is put pen to paper. And I'm going to start writing about that girl I pretended that other girl did. You know, all the stuff I did, I always pretended some other girl did it. I never owned it until I got sober. I always pretended that, oh, that was just some other girl. And I would act like that with you, too. Because I needed to feel a little bit like I wasn't really, I was so shameful. And I hated myself at the Passion when I got here. I wouldn't even look in the eye. I wouldn't even look in mirrors. You know, I felt so shamed and just inferior. Those N words and I-N, inferior, insecure, insignificant. You know, all those things that we can feel so easily today as much as then. You know, I'm a air disease. It's just, and that's understanding the truth of my condition. Doesn't happen as often or last as long, and I'm okay with that. You know, but this is the first time I'm going to really take a look at me. Put me on paper, because paper doesn't lie. Mm-hmm. That's why it's so important for me to, because I can see crossing out and stuff. I start writing stuff. And what a great thing. I mean, little did I know that this was going to help with that disconnect. I had no clue. All I knew is that, and also, you know, being honest about who you write down. Because I was like, oh, I don't want anybody to think bad of my mama. You know, if I write my mama's name down, it ain't got nothing to do with that. It's not even about, because a lot of, as most resentments and things, they weren't about her anyway, and they were about me and my perception of whatever, and me not accepting people for who they are, and all of, none of that was about them. It was about me. You know, this is about my life and me living. But that was important for me to know. A sponsor told me that. Don't worry. Nobody else is going to see it. You know, being reassured. And having someone that shared themselves, and we'll talk more about it in the fifth step, but actually during this process and explaining it, even taking one and giving me an example, which is what I'll do for mine, so that they understand, you know, that, yes, I've had them. Sometimes when you're sober for a good while, people forget that you actually drank and did stuff. You know, it's like, sometimes I think I need to tell some stories, you know, just to qualify again or something. You know, it's like, just because I've been sober a long time, but I mean, some of the new, we air tree meets on Thursdays a month, and some of the like week sober, month sober, and it's like they're it's very humbling for that to look at me like that, because I'm thinking, baby, I am you and you are me. Mm-hmm. And I think I need to be telling some stories, because you need to get that it's level playing field here, and we all. That's the beauty of it. Nobody's unique. The only thing I'm unique is I'm uniquely qualified to help another alcoholic, and we all are. We all are. And so this process, what does it talk to me about? A fact-finding and fact-facing, searching and fearless. And it talks about a business, goes out of business if you don't go through everything. I mean, she said permanent and effect. She's right. I mean, that's a key word, permanent. But why do we write inventory? I was told I wrote it to remove the stuff that's blocking me from God. Mm-hmm. And that's the disconnect. So I can be in the sunlight of the Spirit and help God's kids. And my sponsor said, do you want to become the person God would have you be? I was like, sounds good. I mean, at this point, I'm like, yes. Because I sure don't want to be, after I'm writing all that stuff, I'm like, oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. You know, just pretty blown away. Mm-hmm. But grateful that I'm not doing it anymore. Not going off in morbid reflection about it, but being grateful, I'm not doing that anymore. And being reminded, because I kept in good touch with her. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can have a sponsor, but you got to use one for it to work. So, anyway, and it talks about the common manifestations. That's resentment, fear, the way I treat people, the motives in relationships, all that stuff. You know, and I'm just going to talk about the fourth step for a moment and then close myself. But, you know, going through it, you know, when you really read this, I mean, I've done it a couple of different ways, and I've seen these crazy charts and these, like, 50 million question things, questions that are embarrassing. I mean, people showed me stuff people had given them, asking, you know, for four steps, and I'm like, you know, this works fine.
Amen.
When I got, because I'll start creating stuff, because then we get competitive, you know. But when I got sober, I was so excited to be alive. And I say alive, not just sober, alive. Because I was dying. This thing's about life and death. It's about living a spiritual life. But back in the 80s, self-help books were huge. Remember that? Mm-hmm. Huge. Oh, my gosh.
And teddy bears.
Teddy bears.
Oh, inner child.
Huge. So I went into a self-help store, and I bought like 10 different books. I'm this, I'm that. I got so confused. and I ended up getting rid of all of them and just using this. And the directions are so clear. But I wouldn't know it if I didn't have a sponsor walk me through it. Mm-hmm. But they're so clear. It tells me exactly what to do. You know, and one of my favorite lines in this book is, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we were straightened out mentally and physically. That is so beautiful. I remember hearing Ken D say that years ago when he spoke, and we'd all go to, Sammy and I, we know each other for many, most of our sobriety, mm-hmm. going to a lot of the same conferences and all, and what an amazing guy, and Tula, you probably know Ken D, and what a beautiful, when he said that, I was just like, wow, and hearing people that are talking about our book, you know, and remembering the people. It's not like I think they made it up. He said where he got it, you know, but it tells me that. And what does that mean for me after going through this process? When the spiritual malady is overcome, for me, I straighten out mentally and physically. I start taking better care of myself. I start eating better. Start getting good night's sleep. My mind clears up because food is vital to thinking. I remember before I got sober, I just eat a piece of cheese every now and then to make myself feel like I'm getting some nutrition. And that's that alcoholic mind saying, oh, yeah, that cheese got a little calcium. That's good. And cigarettes, you know, beer, but, you know. And but, you know, it's so straighten out, you know, spiritual maladies overcome. All of a sudden, you know, I'm feeling better mentally. I'm clearer. I can make better decisions, but I find out how vital it is physically. When I went into treatment, I gained 15 pounds because I was so underweight, and I had to learn how to eat. I mean, my children were taken care of. I've lived with my parents for the fourth time, and my parents were so amazing. A lot of you have heard my story about how they just were there, and I was very blessed to have parents that did that. And they really helped out, and my kids, I mean, thank God, I'm just so blessed to have them. And I, on the other hand, it just really was very underweight, and I had to learn something simple like that, and that's about eating. Now, the spiritual malady wasn't overcome then, but they knew I needed to eat. And the longer I was sober and have been sober, the more I want to take care of myself. Mm-hmm. I want to get a good night's sleep. It's important for me to know, you know, that's important for me to feed my spirit, and truly so I can help God's kids, mm-hmm. is really what it's all about. And so this experience... And I've done more than one. And the last thing I'll say is, two things. One is the directions are here. Mm-hmm. They are here. It totally outlines how to do it. Nothing needs to be added, said. There's lots of ways people do it. The bottom line is to do it. You know, and it doesn't have to be perfect, but you mm-hmm. know how we are. But you just do it. And picking somebody, which we'll talk about in the morning, that you a closed mouth friend that you trust. But I love a prayer that's in here that the four-step prayer, the angry prayer, you know, and boy, that word cheerfully being in there. It's the top of page 67 when it talks about we ask God to help us show them the same tolerance because we're talking about, let me back up. This was their course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Well, I got to look at myself too and say, was I spiritually sick? Though we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. Mm-hmm. We ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully, keyword, grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. That works. It really does. It's a beautiful prayer. My girls know. You know, they'll say, all right, I know, I the angry prayer, you know, and it's like, but it works, you know, it's because I'll be going, get ready to say something, I know, right, the angry prayer. And, but it just shows that how, again, I would not have known that. I mean, what a beautiful prayer, and I have to use that, and I have to remember that people are spiritually sick like me, and also I have to remember that sometimes there's nothing going on with them, it's just me. You know, and that's probably 99% of the time. My sponsor tells me the problem's with me. You know, and Sammy talked about it. See, you know, when we're fighting against something, it's not that world, it's us. And it says we avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful, because again, it drives home. We're suiting up and going through this deal so we can help God's kids. And it's reiterated constantly throughout the book. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. And I'm going to tell you, and there's so much more I could say, but I'm going to close. I am so grateful that most of the time, things are none of my business, and I do keep my mouth. Now, that's been a process, okay? This is a process. This ain't no overnight thing. It's 26 years into it. But, I mean, and I don't know when it happened. It just happens as a result of it. But I'm so grateful that I can just want the best for others, you know, and that I don't have that rope attached anymore. And that what I did, you know, what I've done in the past is my greatest asset that I can share with another. Everything I've been through before sobriety and in sobriety, I've been able to pass on to another person, you know, knowing that. And that I'm not a bad person. I'm somebody with a really bad disease. It will kill me. It's fatal, you know, and it's up to me, you know, but I got to put legs on my prayers. I got to do the work. I got to be willing to ask God to help me. And it gets into the sex ideal. That's something that I've learned that a lot of folks don't do. I don't know how that gets overlooked, but it's on page 69. And it talks about we try to shape a sane and sound ideal for a future sex life. And, I mean, that's huge. And I had to have a sponsor tell me that. You know, write it down. You know, and I have to be willing to grow to be that person that I'm asking God to help. I'm asking God to help me mold my ideals and help us to live up to them. I've got to be willing to be the person that I'm asking to come into my life. You know, I don't have a good picker. I know that says sex, but I think it's, you know, it's about relationships. And I know that, and I seriously don't want anybody that I've picked out. I got some references that are just amazing, and a lot of us do, you know. And I learned in this inventory about the way I treated people, and that I really didn't treat people nice sometimes. And that showed me my seeking and my demanding and all the other stuff that I was trying to do. And the one thing I know for sure is if I'm not taking care of my inventory and I'm not writing about it, it's going to come out sideways in my life, you know. And a lot of times if people don't go, if they stop at 3 and don't start writing, there's a certain places we lose them, I think. It's after 3, it's after 5. You know, at 9, it's after 8. You know, there's certain places we lose people because there's more work to be done. And you know, it's a small price to pay for your life. So anyway, thank y'all.
Yeah. Thank you, Kristen. Woo!
Hope I didn't go over. I think I did. She's right there.
Thank you so much.
Okay. We will reconvene tomorrow at 9:15, and we'll be going, we'll start with step 5, and we'll have our lunch about 11:30, and we'll continue on with the rest of the steps through the 12th step and conclude at 2:30 tomorrow. So please join us for all or part of that, if you can. We did pass the 7th tradition basket, but if you did not get a chance to contribute and you'd like to, there's a basket on the top of the counter back there. If you'd like to, just kind of leave whatever you'd like there. Our contributions cover our rent and expenses. The 7th tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It's both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, which is to help other alcoholics who still suffer. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. This is a home group. We usually meet on Monday nights at 7 o'clock. The home group members are here in the room at 6. If you want to come and sit down and chat with any of us, we're happy to do that from 6 to 7, and then we begin our meeting at 7 every Monday in this room, 7 o'clock. Home group members, would you raise your hands so we can identify them?
Strong. Nice.
Okay. I talked about the literature. Sponsorship. Sammy and Christy talked about sponsors a lot because you absolutely have to have a sponsor. You cannot do this without a sponsor. It's impossible. Well, you can do it, but you won't get the result that is promised in the book.
It's the alcoholism, the ISM. I sponsor myself.
Perfect. Yeah, don't forget that. That's great. Okay. So, sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, don't delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we have two women and two gentlemen tonight who are going to be up here at the front. Evan and Johnny, right here. Could you guys stand up? Evan and Johnny will be up here at the front tonight if you want to talk with one of them. And Leanne and Jill are going to be up here at the front if you're a female and you need to talk about sponsorship.
Very cool.
Okay. Thank you again tonight.
Oh, thank y'all. Thank y'all. Woo-hoo!
So we do have a little bit of time. We need to probably be out of the room in about the next 25 minutes, but please don't let that preclude you from stopping and talking and, you know, getting together with somebody if you are you know, we have some new people and we want you to stay and talk to us. Just pick anybody out. Any of the home group members would be happy to talk with you tonight. Okay. Who wants to read the last paragraphs of 164 for us?
Yay! Yeah.
I'll do it.
Do it.
My name's Evan. I'm an alcoholic.
Evan!
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you could do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you. Until then, thank you.
Thanks, Evan.
Thank you.
Okay, anybody that wants to join us, we usually close your
door.
Actually,
it's my favorite one.
I think so.
Yeah, I did, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's out of juice.
I know.
I'm so glad to be here. I love you both.
I didn't want to.
Okay.
I didn't want to interrupt you.
You're good. It was great seeing you. Come in.
I'll be on time in the morning.
Now it looks like a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's great.
Would you like to lead us?
Sure.
Okay.
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Right. Yay.